Don't try to speak, father,
Thomas said, kneeling over him, inspecting his wounds. In Heinrich's peripheral vision, he could see other familiar faces picking across the snowy landscape, searching for survivors. He knew they would find none. He swallowed the coppery taste from his mouth.
You came back.
Always.
He was putting pressure on the gut wound, using the heel of his hand to stem the blood flow, delaying the inevitable.
Stubborn,
Heinrich grunted.
I get that from you,
Thomas said. He smiled, but Heinrich could instantly see the pain behind it, the fear.
It's my time, son. Do better than I have done.
Impossible.
I made too many mistakes.
You are the bravest man I know.
Heinrich squeezed tears from his eyes, feeling them harden to ice on his cheeks.
Make me a promise, son.
Anything.
Leave this place. Never come back.
He coughed, blood filling his mouth. He spat it out, the world spinning, his son's face rotating around his head. He felt so weak, so weak, so...
No.
He refused to die without finishing. Refused to leave his son without guidance.
Return to Night's End. Don't fight the crown. The crown will destroy everything we have built.
Father.
Promise me.
He could feel the life escaping him now, his vision darkening around the edges.
I
promise me,
he hissed, the closest thing to a shout he could muster. Fading, fading, darkness. The cold departing. Warmth. So warm. So...
I promise, father.
Black. Postlude 4. Shanty Parthena Lord. Tarragon. Circa 521.
Absence is dead.
That's what the people were saying, murmuring behind hands, whispering behind huts. A general air of solemnity had fallen over the city, replacing the usual peacefulness Shanty felt.
But how can a god die?
Shanty wondered. She might only be 9 years old, but she'd been to temple enough times to know that their god was infinite, with no end and no beginning. Absence was and wasn't, a void that none could fill. And yet, people were saying absence had been filled. Shanty wanted to see for herself. So when her mother was busy preparing supper with her sister, and her father had not yet returned from working the fields, Shanty slipped out of their mud-floored hut and into the murky twilight, which seemed to wrap around her shoulders like a grey cloak. She lived in the capital of Tarragon, Shai, a sprawling city of conical huts and long, rectangular, open-air marketplaces with thatched roofs. Shanty took off at a run, not because she was particularly in a hurry, but because that was what she did. She loved the coolness of the wind washing over her face, the blur of her surroundings as they flashed by, the feeling that no one could catch her even if they tried. A hand shot out, grabbing her arm, and a voice said,
"Hold on there, my Shaflower."
She jerked to a halt, her mind racing to catch up to her heart, which was still running.
"Father?"
Her father was a large man, with thick arms and a broad chest, his hands calloused from days spent working the fields. In the typical Terran manner, his coppery hair was long, tied into three distinct ropes that were secured to his belt to keep them out of his way while working the fields. His nose, chin, cheeks and forehead were blunt, unlike the sharper features Shanty and her sister had inherited from their mother. His large crystalline blue eyes looked darker than usual in the fading daylight.
"Does your mother know you are out?"
he asked. Shanty wasn't one to lie, especially not to her father, who could smell an untruth like a day-old stench. She shook her head, studying her feet, which were bare, her reddish skin visible beneath the hem of her pale blue dress.
"Where are you going at such an hour?"
She looked up and met his eyes, which weren't angry, but curious.
"To see it," she said.
"Absence?"
"Everyone is saying absence is dead."
Her father ran a hand over the crown of his head, and his lips curled into a small smile, though she didn't see any reason to be happy, not if the rumours were true. He touched one of his hands to her chest, right over where her heart was still beating too fast, on account of her sprint.
"What do you feel?" he asked.
"Nothing. I feel nothing."
She paused before she continued, because she did feel something. A warmth, radiating from her chest, her heart, outwards to her arms, her legs, her head.
"Warm," she said. "I feel warm."
The evening was cool, the wind washing over her.
"But I was just running. That's why I'm warm."
"If you say so," her father said.
She frowned, something her mother said she did too much, especially when she was thinking. She was always thinking.
"No one ever said absence brings warmth,"
Shanti said.
"You're right, they don't. Let's go for a walk."
It wasn't what she expected him to say. But he'd already roped his arm around her shoulders and steered her in the same direction she was already heading, away from their hut, toward the temple. Walking rather than running, Shanti noticed that dozens of other Terrans were heading in the same direction, slowly, like fish swimming upstream. Others peeked from hut doorways and windows, watching their neighbors pass by, seeming to consider whether they should join them.
"Everyone is curious," her father said. "Everyone is scared."
Shanti said nothing, wondering what they would find when they reached their destination. Would they all laugh at the false rumours, wondering how such lies could have spread so fast? Or would their mouths open in shock, in horror, their fear doubling when they saw the truth? She listened to her heart beating in her chest, felt the warmth that filled her.
"Absence? Is that you? Are you alive?"
They reached a circle of small huts, seven in total. Temple. Each hut contained a different characteristic of absence. Purity, selflessness, faith, patience, generosity, courage, perseverance. The seven virtues of their god. Once a week all Terrans would attend temple and focus on one of these virtues, attempting to achieve but a sliver of the righteousness of their deity. Once one achieved all seven, they could apply to become a temple priest or priestess, if they chose. Shanti had only achieved perseverance so far.
"You were born with that virtue,"
her mother always said, though her sister, Aaliyah, had achieved purity, faith, and selflessness. They walked between two of the huts, the ones for selflessness and generosity, and stopped, the crowd too thick to pass. Shanti craned her neck, trying to see over the mob, past the long-haired men and short-haired women.
"Patience," her father said.
Shanti had not been born with the virtue of patience, and suspected she would never achieve that one, even if she had 100 lifetimes to do so. Slowly the crowd pushed forward as those at the front departed temple on the opposite side. Once there was only a single row of people in front of them, Shanti slipped away from her father and squeezed between two people, nearly tripping as she skidded to a halt in front of... She'd been to temple 1,000 times, and every time the last stop was the centre, to gaze upon absence, to pray, to fathom the fathomless, an infinite whole with no end.
"It's gone."
A shiver trembled through her at the sight. Where there was once a hole, absence's haven on the earth, there was now only dirt, packed down hard, a slightly different colour than the ground around it.
"Absence is dead."
Shanti felt like crying, but no one else was, and she wondered why.
"Aren't they sad? Don't they feel the loss?"
It was just like when someone they knew died. No one cried then, either. Terrans mourned in a different way. By eating and drinking and dancing, celebrating the life they'd lost rather than the fact they'd lost it. But this was different, wasn't it? This wasn't just some person who'd passed into the void. This was absence. This was God. Shanti wanted to scream, to yell at these people who walked silently away from temple, not showing any emotion at all. And then her father was there, his arm around her, and she looked up at him. He was smiling. Something about his smile made her angry, so angry she balled her fist and wanted to hit him.
"It's cold," she said instead.
"Is it?" her father asked, raising his thin copper eyebrows.
"Yes. No. I feel empty."
"Like absence?" She didn't know what to feel, and when she looked around, she found they were the last ones there, save for a priest, who watched them from afar.
"You should go home," the holy man said. "There is nothing left for anyone here."
"We'll leave soon," her father answered. The priest nodded and slipped away.
"I still feel warm,"
Shanti admitted when they were alone. Her father nodded.
"That's the truth. Listen to what's in your heart, not what's before your eyes."
She tried, she really did, but as Shanti stared at dirt where a hole should be, she couldn't.
"I don't know how."
"This is the seventh virtue," he said, "the hardest one to achieve. Faith. Even those who think they've achieved it usually haven't."
Shanti remembered the lost look in the priest's eyes. He was supposed to have achieved all seven virtues, but her father had basically just accused him of being one short.
"How many have you achieved?" she asked him.
She was surprised to realize that she didn't know how many of the virtues either of her parents had achieved.
"All of them," he said.
The truth startled her.
Her father was a seven.
"Then why aren't you a priest?"
"Because it's a choice, and I chose a different path."
"You're a farmer."
"I love farming, growing things, providing for our people."
"But
one day you will understand. One day you will find your true calling." She hoped he was right, because she knew she would never be a seven.
"What now? If absence isn't dead, then where has our God gone?"
"Nowhere," her father said. "Absence is in our hearts always. And absence is here in front of us. Absence can't be killed any more than the wind can be killed." She frowned again.
"I don't understand."
He smiled.
"That's because you don't have faith."
"Not yet.
Let me show you."
He kneeled down and began to dig. After a few moments just watching him, wondering if her father had gone mad, Shanti knelt down and started helping him. She scooped handfuls of dirt, pushing them aside, tossing them behind her. Soon they had made a wide depression in the ground, right where the hole used to be.
"Is he planning to redig the entire hole?" she wondered.
The thought almost made her laugh. If so, they'd be digging for the rest of their lives. Still, there was something satisfying about watching the hole get deeper and deeper, the mounds of soil around the edges getting taller and taller. When they got too deep to climb out, they carved steps into the walls. They toiled until well after dark, the crisscrossing moonbeams splashing on the walls of the hole. Exhausted, Shanti stopped to catch her breath. They were really deep now, almost twice as deep as her father was tall. Her father, several locks of his long hair having broken free, sticking with sweat to his body, kept working, however, using a stick to dig out rocks that got in the way. Shanti was just about to get back to work when his stick thudded against something hard. Not a rock. He glanced at her, a grin creasing his sweat-sheened face.
"What is it?"
she asked.
"An answer," he said. "A truth."
She crawled over to him and helped him dig away the thin layer of soil that covered whatever he had struck.
"It's wood,"
Shanti said when they broke through. It was true. A long wooden beam ran across the hole, jammed firmly into each wall. Next to it was another, and another. Like a platform. The dirt that had filled in the hole had been piled atop the wood.
"I feel air,"
Shanti exclaimed. Though the boards were tightly packed together, there was still room for a cool breeze to waft up from the empty space beneath. She smiled, really smiled, for the first time since they'd seen the patch of dirt in the center of temple.
"Now does your mind believe what your heart always knew?" her father asked.
"I just needed to see it," she said. "I needed proof."
"Faith is knowing without seeing."
"Why didn't you tell the others? You let them walk away."
"They weren't ready,"
her father said. Perhaps tomorrow there will be.
What do we do now?
Run home. Get rope. Bring my axe.
What do I tell Mother?
Tell her I sent you. Aaliyah was already asleep when Shanti burst through the hut door. Shanti expected her mother to be angry, to scold her for sneaking out and returning in the dark, sweaty and filthy. But she wasn't. She helped Shanti find the rope and axe, as if she'd expected her all along.
"Come home safe," she said,
watching Shanti race back out into the night.
"And bring your father with you."
Shanti sped through the empty streets, wondering what the other Terrans were dreaming of. Were they dreaming of a world without absence? A world without meaning? She longed to see their faces when they awoke the next morning to find the hole reopened. When she arrived back at the center of temple, her father used the rope to secure them both to a metal loop pounded into the ground beside the hole. Despite how late it was, Shanti felt energized. She hadn't expected her father to include her in the next part of the task. Hand over hand, they lowered themselves back into the hole, their feet thudding on the wooden platform at the bottom. "Do you want to take a swing?" he asked her. It took all her restraint to not scream, "Yes!" She nodded, accepting the axe by the handle. He motioned her toward the side of the hole. "Try to cut as close to the wall as possible," he instructed. She held the axe with both hands, one much closer to the blade than the other. She swung. Whack! It took her several tries to yank the blade back out of the wood, but when she did, she found a satisfying slice in it. She looked back at her father, and he smiled. "Keep going. Just like that." When she tired, he took over. They switched back and forth, moving around the perimeter, hacking through the wooden boards, which began to fall away, clattering into a darkness so complete it was like the absence of light. A satisfying darkness. Instead of fear, Shanti felt only warmth, a sensation of comfort. Her skin tingled, not unlike the feeling after a bath, when her mother had scrubbed her clean. "Father," she said, staring at her arms. "I know, Maisha Flower," he said. "I feel it too. Absence is very much alive." Shanti also felt alive, more alive than ever before. She wondered if this was how the priests and priestesses felt during their initiation ritual, when they were lowered into the hole, communing with absence in darkness for an entire day and night. If so, she suddenly wanted to become a priestess. While she hung, enjoying the sensation shivering through her, Shanti's father finished the job, cutting away the rest of the boards, until only open air remained. Beside each other, they hung from their ropes, dangling over the nothingness beneath them. "It's time to go," her father said.
"I don't want to."
"Neither do I," her father admitted. "But we must. This isn't our place."
"Just a little bit longer, please."
He relented, and they hung there for what felt like an eternity, if it was a second. Just existing. Living. Feeling. Being. "We have to go, before we can't bring ourselves to leave," her father said, more insistently this time. Shanti took a deep breath, grabbing hold of one of the steps they'd carved into the wall. Started climbing. When she emerged from the hole, rolling into the dirt, she felt as if she'd lost a part of her soul. The next day she awoke invigorated, despite having slept only half as long as usual. She threw back her sheets and burst from bed, racing past her mother and shoving open the door. She stared out expectantly, waiting to see the smiles, the laughs, the looks of wonder and excitement and hope and reinvigorated faith. Instead, she saw only misery. Those who walked past stared at their feet, their heads hanging. People were going about their daily business, but in a heavy, trudging manner, like they were carrying sacks of stones on their backs. Confused, Shanti poked her head back inside, searching for her father. "He's gone," her mother said, focused on breakfast. Aaliyah said, "Where were you last night, anyway?" Her older sister was frowning at her, helping to wash the rice and beans that would soon become their traditional morning meal. Her hair had grown dangerously long, and was on the verge of being disgraceful. and yet Shanti thought it made her look utterly beautiful.
Didn't Father tell you?
He wouldn't say anything. Though Shanti was practically bursting to tell someone about what she'd experienced the night before, to shout the truth from the rooftop of the marketplace, she clamped her lips shut. Something about it didn't feel right, not anymore. Not when the entire city seemed to be swimming in an ocean of sadness.
"We were at temple," she said.
"Sad, isn't it?" Aaliyah said, her turquoise eyes blinking rapidly.
"What will we do without absence? Will we still visit temple? Will we still seek the virtues?"
"I don't know,"
Shanti snapped, shoving back outside and leaving her sister stunned and her mother halfway through a rebuke. She ran, anger coursing through her. She was angry at her sister's questions, angry at her father for leaving without her, angry at the people of the city for acting the same way as yesterday, even when everything, everything, had changed. Her father and she had changed it. Most of all, she was angry at herself for the sinking feeling she felt in her gut, because she felt sad too.
"I communed with absence. I should be happy."
She skidded around a corner and galloped between temple's huts, screeching to a halt before the very place she'd spent half the night toiling under the stars. Her mouth gaped open. Her father stood arguing with one of the priests, gesturing at the center of temple, where, once again, the hole was gone, filled in with hard-packed dirt.
"I don't understand,"
Shanti said once they were back home again. Her mother and sister were gone off to the marketplace.
"Why can't we just dig it up again? Show everyone it's a lie."
"The people have lost their faith," her father said.
"But the priest—"
"The holies, too. They wouldn't even listen. If they cannot believe without proof, then they don't deserve to know."
"But if you show them—"
Before Shanti could finish her thought, a cry rose up from without their hut. Her mother and sister rushed in a moment later, dresses swirling around their ankles.
"Phoenicians,"
her mother wheezed, her chest heaving. Shanti hissed in a sharp breath. Their neighbours across the burning sea to the north had rarely set foot in Tarragon, only appearing once a year during the summer harvest to trade for coffee beans, golden wheat, sugar, and other native goods. They were too early. Recently, travellers had been telling disconcerting stories of Phoenician slave ships sailing further and further.
"They've come for us," Shanti's father said.
His voice sounded hollow, like part of it had been scooped out and tossed aside.
"The people will fight,"
her mother said.
"We will fight."
She reached over and snatched their largest knife from the table. Her mouth was pulled into a straight line of determination. Her father shook his head.
"No," he said. "They won't fight. They think absence has abandoned them. They will submit like lambs to wolves."
Her mother's face was ashen.
"We have to hide the children."
Her father nodded.
"Hurry."
"No,"
Shanti said.
"We want to stay with you."
Beside her, Aaliyah started crying.
"I know, my Shaflower, my Ali bird," her father said, cupping each of his daughter's cheeks. "I know."
And then he grabbed Shanti and forced her toward the bed. She kicked and struggled, but he was too strong. He forced her beneath the bed, into a narrow crawl space. Aaliyah crawled in next, sobbing, her too long hair getting in Shanti's mouth. Shanti tried to shove past her sister, but there wasn't enough room to maneuver.
"Aaliyah, move!"
Her sister only cried harder. Helpless, Shanti watched her parents' feet as they crossed the room together. Then she saw the base of a heavy wooden chest as it was slid along the floorboards and shoved against the side of the bed, blocking all light. Her parents' footsteps receded away, and the door creaked open and then banged shut. Shouts arose once more.
"Shah, I'm scared,"
Aaliyah said. Shanti sometimes wished her older sister acted like the older sister. But Aaliyah had never been as adventurous as she was, always scared of interesting things like worms and critters and the dark. Still, she was her sister. She put her hand on Aaliyah's shoulder and said,
"We're safe now. But Mother and Father are not."
More shouts, the sound of slamming doors, someone crying. Another door banged open.
Ours,
Shanti thought.
Oh, absence,
Aaliyah whispered. Her voice choked with a sob.
Shh,
Shanti murmured in her ear. Neither of them breathed as footsteps stomped across the room. Shanti's father's voice rose up.
This is our home. How dare you?
The crack of knuckles hitting flesh rang out, cutting off his protest.
Answer my questions only. Do you and your woman live here?
My wife, yes.
Just you?
Yes.
No children?
We have not yet been blessed by abs...
Crack. The sound of someone spitting. Her father?
Don't speak to me of your false god. Your false god is dead.
Despite her fear, Shanti couldn't help but think.
How does he know that already?
You filled in the hole, didn't you?
Her father asked.
What?
Shanti thought.
Why would the Phoenicians...
The man laughed.
Very clever. Good thing the rest of your people aren't so smart. Not me personally, but yes, we are responsible for the death of your god. Someone tried to ruin our plans, but failed.
Shanti wanted to cry.
It was us! We did it!
But she managed to hold her tongue, listening intently for whatever came next. There was a creak as the man sat down on the chest, moving it slightly with his weight. Shanti could see a sliver now, her father's boot, his thick leg. Someone was standing behind him, holding him, perhaps.
Is that why he's not fighting back?
She remembered the knife, the fierce gleam in her mother's eyes.
She wanted her mother to stab this man, to kill him, to break him and end him and...
She realized her fists were clenched so tightly, her own fingernails were digging into her palms, hurting her. Slowly, she released them. She'd never felt so angry in her life. Never had thoughts of violence. But now, she hated the man sitting on the chest. The one holding her father, hurting him. The Phoenicians.
Did this chest used to be over there, against that wall?
The man said.
I see an outline. A discoloration on the floor.
Her father said, yes, we moved it only recently. He kept his voice remarkably even.
Why?
We kept tripping over it.
You have two beds. You and your woman sleep in separate beds.
My wife, he corrected with a growl. Yes, I am a restless sleeper.
You are a good liar, the man said. Why do you not submit to us the way the rest of your people do? Why must you make my life difficult?
Because I have faith and hope and courage and all of the other virtues. I am a seven.
Words will not change your fate, nor your woman's, nor your children's.
I have no children.
Remove him,
the man ordered. Shanti's father finally struggled against the man holding him, but it was fruitless, his boots dragging across the wood and out the door.
Where would I find two little red-skinned heathens hiding?
The man said. There was a tapping sound, perhaps his fingernails against his teeth. Aaliyah's breaths were coming too fast now, getting louder. Shanti pressed her lips to her sister's ear and said, "Shh." Her sister quieted, and they both held their breath as the man stood up from the chest. His foot was right in front of the narrow gap, facing away. It turned. With a suddenness that took Shanti's breath away, he roared, the chest tumbling away, crashing open, spilling its contents, clay pots and dishes, which shattered into thousands of sharp shards.
Two little heathens hiding under a bed,
the man sang. His hands flew underneath, dragging Aaliyah out by the hair as she screamed. Shanti tried to grab her sister's foot, but she was already gone, passed to someone else who took her away. Next he came for her. But she was ready. The moment his hands appeared, reaching for her, she lunged forward, clamping her teeth down on his wrist. She bit down as hard as she could, tearing at the skin like a piece of meat, growling like an animal. She poured all the hatred and anger and fear she'd felt over the last few moments into that bite. The man howled, wrenching his hand away, which only caused more of his skin to tear off. Drips of blood pooled on the floorboard in front of Shanti. She kicked hard, wriggling like a worm trying to escape. She slid through the blood, fighting to her feet.
"You little animal!"
The man, who looked more like a woman with his short cropped hair, screamed, grabbing her shoulders. She shoved her fingers into his eye as hard as she could. He dropped her, releasing another howl, and she tumbled to the floor, banging her knee. Ignoring the pain, she rolled back to her feet and raced for the door, which stood wide open. She galloped into the light, blinking back tears as she scanned her familiar city filled with unfamiliar people. People who now stared at her. The Terrans were dead-eyed, looking lost, their hands and feet tied with thick rope. They were being marched along toward the sea, their feet shuffling lifelessly.
"They look almost dead," Shanti thought.
"Shanti!"
a voice cried, and she spun to the left to locate it. Her father also bound, twisting his head around to look at her. Three men surrounded him, shoving him away.
"Father!"
Shanti took off toward him, slamming into the back of one of the captors, knocking him into her father. They went down in a sprawl of human flesh and ropes, and for one stolen moment, she found herself face to face with the man who'd raised her.
"Don't fight them," her father said. "Not now."
And then strong arms ripped her away from him, lifting her high into the air. No matter how hard she struggled, she couldn't escape. The stench of human filth seemed to permeate everything. The only sounds were groans and moans, and the creak of the wooden ship as it swayed from side to side. Shanti had lost count of the days and nights at sea, each one blending into the next. In the dim lighting, she stared at her bent legs. They didn't hurt anymore, so long as she didn't move them too much. The man she had hurt back in their hut had broken them both as punishment. They promised her the bones would heal before it was time for her to work. Her father had collected enough scraps of clothing to wrap them up, stabilizing them for the journey across the sea. She wondered whether she would ever walk again.
"It doesn't matter, does it?" she thought bitterly. "We are slaves now. We are nothing."
It was true. The slave masters treated them like sheep, herding them hither and thither, forcing the able to walk for exercise, to keep them healthy enough to work when they arrived in Fanes. Shanti, however, was forced to stay with the youngest of the children and the oldest of the elders, like some kind of cripple.
"I am a cripple," she thought.
Aaliyah cried every time she was forced to move. It broke Shanti's heart, but there was nothing she could do for her sister now. At least they hadn't hurt her, not physically, at least. Her parents tried to comfort them from time to time, but even they had grown quieter in recent days. The women were not allowed to cut their hair anymore, and many of them were beginning to look like men. Her own hair felt hot on her shoulders, and she longed to pull it out. She remembered the last conversation she'd had with her father, whose hair was short now, a coppery dome atop his head. If not for his familiar eyes, he might be a stranger. "Shaflower," he'd said. "How do your legs feel?"
"Broken,"
she'd said. She hadn't meant it as a jape, but he'd laughed anyway.
"They will mend. Give them time."
"Why is this happening?"
she'd asked.
"Is it because the people lost faith?"
She'd been thinking about this a lot.
"Only absence knows."
"But absence has abandoned us, right? Everyone says so."
Her father shook his head.
"No. Absence will never abandon us if we keep space in our hearts for something more than ourselves."
"Father?"
"Yes?"
"We communed with absence, right?"
"I believe so," he said.
"But I don't feel any different. What did the darkness do to us?"
He licked his dry lips, seeming to consider whether to answer such a direct question. Then he nodded.
"You deserve to know the truth. Absence grants us our deepest desires."
Shanti frowned, thinking.
"What is yours?"
"To protect my family," he said.
Shanti glanced over at her mother and sister, both of whom seemed to be sleeping. Even so, she lowered her voice to a whisper.
Why?
Her father laughed. Absence told me I should. Apparently, absence needs us. Needs you.
For what?
Only absence knows. Even though Shanti had a million more questions, something about knowing absence needed her made her feel warm inside.
"What is my deepest desire?"
Shanti asked. "That is for you to determine," her father said. Shanti stared through the portal at the rolling sea, surprisingly thankful for the burst of fresh, salty air that met her skin. Something caught her eye in the distance. Something new, different than water and clouds. Land. And in that moment, she knew what her deepest desire was. Freedom. Postlude 5. Viper Sands. The Southern Empire, Calypso. Circa 524.
Gods! How Viper despised her sister, Sun.
From a safe distance, atop the pyramid, the three sisters watched as Empress Ryza San's plague-riddled corpse was burned, her ashes sent to the gods in a billowing cloud of black smoke. Viper pretended it was someone else, anyone but Mother, which was the only way she could keep from crying. She was the youngest, the third daughter, 21 name days old, but that was no excuse for weakness. The three daughters were Sands, and had to maintain appearances, even on the worst day of their lives. The second daughter, Windy, 2 years older than she, barely seemed to notice the burning ceremony had begun, her nose stuck in a book. Windy's medium-length black hair was a frizzy mess, her dress wrinkled beyond repair. She was even missing a shoe, though she probably wouldn't have noticed if she was missing a foot. Such was her concentration on the confounded pages of whatever topic she was currently obsessed with. Terran beliefs related to the afterworld, the cover read. Viper had to stifle a yawn. Her scholarly sister annoyed her, but not nearly as much as their eldest sister. The first daughter, Sun, was 6 years older than Viper, a fact she never failed to remind her of. She wore a long, pale blue dress, which served to accentuate the perfection of her smooth, dark skin. Her long black hair was pinned up, resembling a crown, which Viper was certain was no accident. Even while in mourning, Sun managed to maintain her pretentious, holier-than-thou air, her chin lifted high, her hand raised over her head as though she could feel something electric in the air. Viper had the urge to push her down the pyramid. In her mind, she relished the impact of each of the thousand stone steps on her sister's body, breaking her bones one at a time.
She never loved Mother the way I did.
Neither of them did. Yes, Windy and Sun had always been respectful and devoted to their mother, but neither had cared for her as Viper had. Windy was more concerned with soaking in as much knowledge as she could, even if she'd probably never use any of it. She was a scholar without a purpose, the worst kind as far as Viper was concerned. But Sun. Sun coveted the Empire. Though she'd never said as much aloud, Viper knew her eldest sister had longed for her mother's death like a flower longs for sun and rain. A poisonous flower. The desert's Lumia, perhaps. Viper had even once caught her sister sitting on the Empress's dragon throne. The nerve. Worse, Sun had already produced offspring, three daughters, Raven, Fire, and Whisper, the middle of whom bore a Tatuya, the fire mark, though she was only a child of 8 name days old. Not a threat. Yet. It didn't even matter that her sister's political marriage to the Phoenician Emperor had gone up in smoke 4 years earlier, thrusting the Empire into a civil war. If Sun wins the throne, and one of her daughters eventually claims the Empire, I'll never get it back. That isn't going to happen, Viper reminded herself. She's in for a surprise, she thought. She knows Windy cares nothing for ruling, and she thinks I'm too young. I'm coming, sister. I'm coming. All three daughters had made a claim on the throne, as was expected of them, though Windy had done so grudgingly. At the ceremony, Sun had worn a neutral expression, but Viper could see the fakeness behind it. The smile. She thinks she's already won, Viper had thought. Now, in the giant arena nestled between the three pyramids, amidst the raucous shouts and applause of the Calypsian audience, Sun Sands donned a new mask, a fierce snarl, which was clearly meant to intimidate her two younger sisters. Viper played along, backing away as if scared of her sister's wrath. Windy had already been defeated by Sun, within moments of the contest's start. She'd basically let Sun defeat her. The second daughter had left the arena in a hurry, probably off to return to studying some droll book with more pages than her sister had sense. Not me. I refuse to be intimidated. Sun closed in, her long, scythe-like weapon shining in the sunlight. Viper retreated until her back hit the wall. Weaponless, she held her hands over her head. Sun smiled a beautiful smile.
"Do you submit to your new empress, sister?" she asked.
Viper dug her toe into the sand, pretending to consider.
"You have no weapon. You have no chance. Save your dignity and surrender to your better sister." I... Dragon got your tongue?"
The crowd chanted Sun's name. They were already naming her as the new empress.
"You're not the empress,"
Viper growled, kicking her foot in the air, spraying hot sand into her sister's face, into her eyes. Simultaneously, Viper lunged forward, slamming her shoulder into Sun's abdomen, rocking her back. The scythe went flying, while Sun scrubbed at the rough sand, blinding her. Viper was blind, too, with anger. All the pain, all the sadness, all the frustration seemed to pour out of her. She saw red and orange flames. She saw black smoke. She saw golden shards of light. Her fists were true to her name, the lightning quick strikes of a deadly snake, landing blow after blow to her sister's head, face, stomach. The crowd roared even louder, enthralled by the unexpected turn of events and the entertainment it provided. The only thing the Calypsians liked better than the crowning of a new empress was a street fight. Viper planned to give them one. Her sister's face was bloody, and one of her eyes was already puffy and closing up, and still Viper pummeled her. Out of nowhere, Sun bucked backwards and kicked out, connecting solidly with Viper's midsection, sending her head over heels into the air. She landed with a thud in the dirt, the wind gasping out of her. Gone were the flames, the smoke, the golden light. Gone was the pain, the sadness, the frustration. She felt nothing, a numbness settling into her bones. And then, as she blinked away stars, she felt sun-heated metal pressed against her throat.
"I'll do it," Sun growled. "I'll slice you open from ear to ear if you don't submit to me."
Her sister's face came into view. Gone was her beauty, her perfection. Her face a mess of blood and bruising, her lips contorted into a snarl.
"It's almost poetic," Viper thought.
"The outside finally reflects the inside."
"Do I want to die?"
Viper wondered.
"Yes,"
she answered herself. But then another thought struck her. Something her mother had said to her years earlier when Viper, just a young girl, came to her in tears after Sun had knocked her over and made her eat sand.
"Your trials will only make you stronger. And as the youngest, you will have more trials than either of your sisters, which means you'll be the strongest."
Her mother wouldn't want her to die. Her mother had loved her. She could be strong for her memory. She could be strong for herself. Viper did the hardest thing she'd ever had to do.
"I submit," she said. "My empress."
Viper left Calypso 3 days later. Now that the rule of the Empire was decided, there was nothing chaining her to the city. She'd lasted longer than Windy, who had departed for Citadel 2 days earlier. Viper, as was her right, claimed three of the Guanero, the royal guards, to accompany her. They would be her guards for the rest of her life, or theirs, whichever was shorter. The four of them rode Guanic, fierce reptilian steeds that performed far better than horses under the fiery Calypsian sun. As they rode out from the city, watched by throngs of silent Calypsians lining the streets, Viper replayed her final conversation with Sun in her mind.
"You tried to disgrace me," her sister had said,
whilst sitting on the dragon throne. She wore a half-mask in the shape of a dragon's face to hide the worst of the injuries inflicted upon her by Viper.
"How dare I?" Viper said.
She infused just enough mocking into her tone to get her sister's attention. It was all part of her plan.
"And now you would be so bold as to mock me, the Empress of Calyp, Empire of the Rising Sun, she who sits upon the dragon throne?" Gods, the arrogance of her sister never failed to astound her. "Yes, I should have your tongue cut out." "What would it look like to the people?" she said,
dialing back the sarcasm a notch, reeling her sister in.
"If you cannot maintain order amongst your own sisters, how can you be expected to maintain order in the Empire?"
Her sister fumed silently. Viper knew she'd gained a point. "Now to seal the deal.
It is clear we cannot exist in the same city," she said.
Sun cocked her head to the side, narrowing her uncovered eyes suspiciously.
"You would leave Calypso, as Windy did?"
"Yes."
"Where will you go?"
"Don't profess to care."
Viper pretended to sound hurt, like her previous bravado had been an act, and now she was revealing her true feelings. It wasn't difficult. Her sister's tone softened.
"Sister, I don't fault you for trying to defeat me. I know how you've always envied me. The nerve of this woman. And I'm sorry if you are melancholy by Mother's death and my victory." "Melancholy? Mother's death destroyed me, you vile scorpion!"
Viper managed to hold her tongue, hanging her head, maintaining the facade. Sun sighed.
"What would you have me do, sister?"
Viper looked up, letting her hair fall across her face to hide the twinkling she knew was now in her eyes.
"Give me Zune."
The Empress had not refused her. How could she? Not only would she be rid of Viper, but Sun would be relieved of responsibility for the city that had long been considered the thorn in Calyp's proverbial side.
"What have I gotten myself into?"
Viper wondered now, as the city of her childhood grew smaller and smaller behind her.
"Am I a scorpion-squashed fool?"
she asked, turning toward one of her guanero. Cadon was his name, a brash, uncouth bruiser with a tendency toward violent outbursts. And those were his appealing attributes. Viper had carefully selected him, as she knew her sister wouldn't put up a fight. She also knew she could manipulate the bland-faced man in more ways than one.
"If you're a fool, then I'm a Guanic's ass," the man said, slapping his leg.
"Yes," Viper thought. "Yes, you are. But you are my Guanic's ass to tan as I please."
She didn't know the other two as well, Nerge and Piston. Instead, she'd had Cadon select the other two to accompany them, assuming he'd choose others like him. Nerge was definitely in the oaf category, his hands like sledgehammers and almost always curled into fists, as if they were stuck that way. His steed seemed to sag in the center under his enormous weight. Piston, on the other hand, Viper wasn't sure of. He was tall and lean, his skin exceptionally dark, even for a Calypsian, and interspersed with pale scars of various sizes and shapes. There was a grace to him the other two guanero could never hope to emulate. He spoke little and didn't laugh at his comrades' crude japes. Viper was surprised to find herself staring at him. She would have to tread carefully around a man as handsome as he, lest she find herself smitten.
"I don't have time for men," she thought. "I have an empire to overthrow."
Zune was a strange city. Most Calypsians would consider it a dirty, backward, violent place, and yet they travelled by the thousands each year to watch the fights. Most wouldn't admit how much they enjoyed their time in the City of Blood. To Viper, however, Zune was interesting. The sprawling, crowded city was a place of second chances and power. Those who controlled the fighting pits had the power, the ability to entertain the Empire and use some of the most violent characters in the realm to do so. The fighting pits also granted criminals, war prisoners, and deviants a second chance. A new life, one filled with cheering crowds, pain, and, for most of them, death. But not all. The strongest fought on, day after day, in the hopes of moving up and eventually fighting in the Battle Royale, the annual event that drew half of Calip to the northeasternmost city. The winner won their freedom. Viper and her guanero moved through the city, past the shops selling various forms of simpra, a strong drink favoured by most southerners, past half-naked children playing with sharp objects, running along streets littered with broken glass, past brothels and dark-eyed men and sharp-eyed women. They even passed an old man with a rag twisted atop his head, who was attempting to charm a snake. Yes, to Viper, the city of Zoon was her second chance. And I will make it mine. The first stop was at a tavern. Though they had plenty of provisions left, Viper wanted her presence to be felt amongst the common people. Cadon moved through the establishment, shouting orders to the proprietor, herding angry and confused customers out the door. Nerge was equally belligerent, while Piston worked silently. Viper ordered them to stop once half the space was cleared. The remaining customers could stay, watching as she dined like a commoner, on hard bread and sour soup, throwing back the hottest peppers available, something neither of her sisters had ever been able to so much as lick. The people would marvel at her, and eventually leave and spread rumours of the third daughter's unexpected appearance in their city. It was for this exact reason that Viper hadn't sent advance word of her arrival, nor purpose. Zoon wasn't the kind of city where outsiders were welcomed. No, it was a city that understood only one thing. Strength. "I will conquer you," she thought as they left the tavern. In one hand she held a half-eaten pepper, and in the other a bottle of a cinnamon-spiced type of simpra, which she would drink as they rode on. The people stared at her as she rode. Some wore dumbfounded expressions, but they eventually morphed into smiles. "The third daughter is eating peppers and drinking simpra," they whispered. Children ran behind her, laughing and showing off. They reached their next stop, the pits. The fighting pits took up half the city. Hidden behind a wall to prevent fighters from escaping, and to ensure spectators were unable to watch without paying, the pits were nestled along the half of the city that hugged the sea. In the event that the prisoners somehow managed to fight their way out of the pits and past the pit masters, and then climb the enormous stone wall, they would still be forced to swim, hoping none of the ocean's dangerous predators mistook them for monk seals. Viper rode up to the gates, kicking her guanic's ribs so it would snap its jaws and flash its rows of razor-sharp teeth.
"Whoa!"
one of the people at the gate said. He was a squat, round-bellied man with jowls that shook when he talked, or walked, or did much of anything. Before Viper had left Calypso, she had asked one of the royal artists to paint her a picture of this very man, so she would recognize him on sight. Danube, she thought. Pit Lord. For years he'd filled his belly off the blood of the fighters. It was common knowledge that the vile man skimmed profits from the very fighting pits he was charged with overseeing. Until now, no one cared, so long as the entertainment flowed as swiftly as the waters of the spear. "Do you know who I am?" Viper asked without introduction. The man nodded, his mouth flopping open. "Good. Do you always man the gates personally?"
You what?"
the man said, his face turning from pale to pink to red in short succession. "Do you have a hearing problem?"
No, I don't think so. No."
"Good. Then you should listen to my next words very carefully, for they are for your ears. The Empire appreciates your 16 years of service in Zoon." The man's eyebrows shot up.
Well, thank you."
"You're welcome. Now you are hereby relieved of your duties."
I... Excuse me?
You're certain your ability to hear is well? Cadden sniggered.
I don't understand.
Ah, so it's not your hearing that is the problem. It's your wits. Let me explain in simpler terms. She paused, pointing out into the city. Go, now. If I must repeat myself again, I will do so with my guanic's teeth wrapped around your fat skull. With a yelp, the man scurried away, his long robes flapping around his bulbous body like a thick second skin. That was easy, Viper said. Nerge, follow him. See that he doesn't make off with any of his gold, if he has any left. Cadden smirked. Nerge grinned, and then slipped away to follow the now unemployed bulge of a man. Piston said, Trust me, the hard part is yet to come. Something about the way he said it made Viper think he spoke from experience. They left their mounts to be watered and fed. From there they walked along the edges of the small outer pits, occasionally stopping to watch one of the fights. In one pit a young, narrow-eyed Phoenician-looking girl was victorious when she clamped her teeth around the throat of an old man who could barely walk. In another pit, a one-armed man used a staff with impressive skill to batter a much younger opponent until he bled out in the dirt. Each pit seemed to contain more violence than the last. People screamed from the stands, cheering on whichever fighter they'd bet on. Almost anyone could place a bet on these fights, as the minimum wage was only a single wooden scorpion, the lowest monetary denomination in all of Calip. They continued on to the next ring of pits, which were larger and fewer in number. As a fighter won a certain number of matches in the outer rings, typically 9, they moved to these pits to face more worthy opponents. Here the skill was superior, the fights generally longer-lasting, the stakes higher. To bet on these matches you needed to have more coin, at least 2 silver dragons per bout. The pattern continued as they moved inward, each circular ring bearing larger pits in fewer number, until they reached the dead center. The final pit was massive, easily twice the size of the grand arena in Calypso. It was here that the annual battle royale would take place. It was said the surrounding platforms had 100 levels, each of which could hold 1,000 people or more. 100,000 citizens of Calip, Viper thought. Here is where I will win the Empire back. The thought filled her with excitement and purpose. To think, she'd considered letting Sun kill her during their fight. To think, she'd almost wanted her to. Now, a fortnight later, everything looked different, shiny and new. This is my world, she thought. All I have to do is clamp my hands around its throat and squeeze until it submits. Zoon was old and crumbling, the coppery smell of blood laced with sewer water tinging the air. There was great poverty and great wealth, with little in between. The stark gap showcased as pristine mansions cast enormous shadows over ruined buildings, housing hundreds of squatters. In this city, Viper quickly realized, there was great hope and infinite sorrow. Zoon was a city of extremes, and Viper loved it. In her first fortnight as Pit Lord, she focused on the finances which were in disarray, with hidden accounts, missing funds, sizable unpaid debts, and meager salaries for the pitmasters, with most of the profits funneling directly into Danube's rather large pockets. Nerge had caught the rotund man as he was cleaning out his large estate, tossing fine silk garments into a box and loading up a wagon. Unfortunately, as Viper had expected, the man had already spent most of the money he'd stolen, with little left over. Still, they seized his assets, including his estate, sending him scurrying from the city with naught but the clothes on his back, like the scorpion that he was. Rather than auctioning off the land and houses to the highest bidder, Viper instead opened it up to her pitmasters, most of whom accepted her invitation to live in the beautiful quarters, surrounded by servants that answered their every beck and call. She also increased their salaries fivefold, and cut her own salary completely. Coin wasn't a problem for her. Before she'd departed Calypso, she'd claimed her inheritance, a large stipend which would be brought to her 6 times a year under royal guard. Already her pitmasters seemed happier in their new circumstances. She spent time with them each morning, japing with them and even occasionally flirting. They were hard men,